Chapter 71, Lord Krishna travels to Indraprastha. Text number 14. Tathora tadvipa bata. Tathora tadvipa bata sadena yakai. Is that the right meter? Okay. The reason I asked is because nobody responded. Yeah, show us the meter.
Shells.
Gomukai and Gomukak. and Gomukha horns. Pagosh, by the resounding. Goshita, filled with vibrations. Kakuba, all directions. Nara Kramad, he went out. Translation, and eventually some purports by the followers of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. As the vibrations resounding from the mridangas, various kettle drums, conch shells, and gomukhas filled the sky in all directions, Lord Krishna set out on his journey. He was accompanied by the chief officers of his corps of chariots, elephants, infantry, and cavalry, and surrounded on all sides by his fierce personal guard. Responsibly, as the vibrations resounded from mridangas, berries, kettle drums, conch shells, and gomukhas filled the sky in all directions. Lord Krishna set out on his journey. He was accompanied by his chief officers of his corps of chariots. Elephants, infantry, and cavalry, and surrounded on all sides by his fierce personal guard. Text 15. Lord Achyuta's faithful wives, along with their children, followed the Lord on golden palanquins carried by powerful men. The queens were adorned with fine clothing, ornaments, fragrant oils, and flower garlands, and they were surrounded on all sides by soldiers carrying swords and shields in their hands. Purport. According to Sridhar Swami, the word Vaji indicates that some of Lord Krishna's queens were transported by horse-drawn conveyances. Om Gyana Tamanandasya Gnanjana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmalitam Jena Sansmaya Shri Guru Lehinama Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Garadada Sri Vasari Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare Rama Hare Rama. So what we're hearing about in these verses is some kind of royal procession. Now, one could ask, what's this got to do with transcendental life? You know, Vedanta Sutra, the compressed conclusion of the Absolute Truth, contains none of this kind of descriptions. It sounds like a king with a huge entourage, probably a huge false ego, making his way on some journey. Yet, this canto of Bhagavatam is called the Samambona. The conclusion, the highest conclusion of the Absolute Truth. So what we have here is, it's certainly an entourage. A very big entourage, very glorious. We have, you can just imagine, close your eyes, you can imagine a huge procession of beautifully decorated soldiers, queens, and all their attendants moving across the landscape. And just the music, just imagine the music. You've got mridanga drums, you have berry horns, kettle drums, conch shells blasting, gomukha horns, filling the sky in all directions. Tumultuous vibration. It's very musical. As this procession moves across the landscape towards Indraprastha. And you have Krishna at the center of it all, surrounded by chariot warriors, and beautiful chariots of that. Infantry, large decorated elephants, cavalry and men on horses with spears and bow and arrows, and surrounded on all sides by his fierce personal guard. So at the center of it all is Krishna with his elite. Every army has its different grades. And generally those soldiers or warriors assigned to protect the VIP, the king or something, they're the most highly trained and expert. When the president of America gets some time off from his busy schedule of making decisions that affect the entire world, he'll go golfing. He'll jump on his golf caddy and go across the plush, green pastures. Takes a lot of work to make a golf course, actually. I was hearing about it the other day. You basically have to bulldoze the whole land and start again. You put down a proper foundation of gravel and drainage, and then you lay over very fine grasses. Eventually it grows up. Anyway, so he goes for a drive across his pastures, and then you have a huge entourage of other persons dressed in suits. You know, this is his secretaries and so forth, just in case he says something important. But also you have all these guys in dark sunglasses with little earpieces and probably 70 semi-automatic weapons inside their coat. These are the secret service men that protect the prisoner. Highly trained. Warriors. Kali Yuga. Modern day warriors. So, Krishna has his own personal guard in the Vedic style. And he is going from Dwarka to Indraprastha. This is what's been described. Across India. So, how is this the absolute truth? Well, ultimately, the spiritual world, the highest expression of the absolute truth, is not a void, homogeneous oneness, but rather a variegated display of relationships, of qualities, of pastimes, so many specific details. But the difference is it's all centered around the personality of Godhead. He is the central figure, which everyone orbits around, just like the sun is there and all the planets, according to the olden day conception, which I'm conditioned by. The sun is there and the planets are going around. We often describe the spiritual world with the following metaphor. Just like when you throw a stone into a clear, crystal clear, pristine pool of water, many concentric rings come out from that one center, and it has a certain beauty and grace about it. But by the same token, if you grab a handful of gravel and throw it into the water, each stone that plops into the water has its own center. And all the rings that come out from that center clash with all the other rings. And it lacks the same beauty and grace of that single stone. So, you can think of the material world and the spiritual world in that way. The spiritual world is that place where there is one center, around which everybody, all living entities, orbit in loving devotion. Willingly, this is their... being situated in the natural position, that's what they do. The material world, on the other hand, you have every individual wanting to be the center, and therefore fighting with each other. Their own interests clashing with the interest, other self-interested living entities. Therefore you have wars and battles and on a grand scale and also on just an everyday scale, you have clashes and things with others. And ultimately arises from the self-centeredness. There can be one love, there can be one heart, there can be unity without merging into one globule by the will of every individual becoming one, centered around the same center. What is that center? To please the personality of Godhead. Then it becomes unity. Sometimes it's said that a sadhu should be silent, should be live on his own, should be solitary. But Prabhupada, in the Bhaktivedanta tradition, he explains that actually for the devotee it doesn't mean that one should be silent, that one should be quiet. It does not mean that one should live on his own. It means one should live in association with devotees. It said that when you put many kitchen utensils in a tray or in a drawer, there's generally a lot of noise as they clash and clang against one another. So therefore, such, you know, mental disturbance that arises from social interaction, the sadhu should avoid it. But anybody, any devotee who's lived in the association of devotees knows that you can sleep in a room with, you know, 4, 5, 6 other devotees, and somehow the atmosphere is completely different. It's very peaceful, actually. The association of devotees is very peaceful, even though often devotees live in quite close quarters. That is because there is a certain oneness of will, oneness of purpose that underlies everything. What is that purpose? Initially, to become self-realized, and then ultimately to please the personality of Godhead. So everybody can cooperate and get along on that basis. Of course, you know, there's, because of our anartas that we're trying to get rid of, there's some clash, there's some social disturbance every now and then, but it's easily resolved among sincere parties. If a person is sincere, then nobody wants to cause an offense, nobody wants there to be a disruption, nobody wants to actually be selfish, although sometimes we are. Therefore, as soon as it becomes obvious that I was at fault, my anartas caused some offense, then the devotee will pay humble obeisances at the lotus feet of his or her comrade, and everything will be okay. Everything will be forgiven, and the effort to serve the Lord and to become self-realized will carry on. Therefore, there is unity and peace in the association of devotees, because there is one center. People try and get unity in the world around so many false designations. I was listening to a lecture by Prabhupada the other day, and he was just making his very powerful, simple points that Prabhupada is famous for. That one must become free from designations. What is a designation? I am this, I am that. Yeah. I am white man. Therefore, I'm going to make a white man's club. And we're going to discriminate on all non-white bodied living entities. Or I'm a black man, or I'm a woman, therefore we're going to fight for the whites of, the rights of women, and, you know, stomp down those insensitive men from the patriarch days. Or whatever, you know, I'm an Aussie, therefore we've got to join forces with the US and attack Afghanistan, because this is our party. Whatever. I am from the Melbourne rugby. I'm from Melbourne, so I support the Melbourne rugby team. And down, you know, one evening, me and Dave were in the city putting up some posters. And right at the end of the night, just as the sun was going down, we had this mad sort of yelling. Obviously, alcohol induced. And what came up the road was a huge parade of young men in sort of blue coloured clothing. Turned out to be the Sydney soccer team, like some student soccer team. And they were roaring, they were yelling, and they were throwing bottles everywhere, and they were, because they had just won the game. And then what happened is it trampled up with practically all the Melbourne soccer team in it. So they started throwing bottles at the tram, and they even smashed the window, and they were like standing there going, come on, you guys are cowards. You know, you're hiding inside the tram in your own city, you know. We thought it was going to be a big fight. But the police were kind of there just watching passively for some reason. And the whole thing kind of passed, and all these drunk young hooligans carried on up the street in their chorus of, in their victory chorus. So people like to band together in little groups and fight with the other groups. And what they feel is a kind of happiness. You know, we are bonding. We have a unity of purpose. But what we see is it's so limited. It's so limited. It's so small time. And people join together in little families. Our family, we are one, and we will carve out our place in the world. This is my identity. I am from such and such a family. I have a certain second name. And you try to build up that dynasty or whatever, and you know, and you like that, being able to identify with that group. That's what happened in the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Ultimately, is there was a fight between families, identifying with separate interests. The Kurus, they wanted power and influence for themselves, and that was their whole meditation. Duryodhana's meditation was how to be the king of the world. Yudhisthira's meditation, on the other hand, was how to make human society, lead human society in such a way that everyone can be God conscious. So this is the great gift we've been given by Srila Prabhupada, is this ultimate in partyism, to identify I am spirit soul. Identify myself. I am spirit soul. Part and parcel of the Supreme Absolute Truth. The Supreme Soul, Krishna. A servant of Him. And understanding ourselves as part and parcels of God, the Supreme, there can then be appreciation of all forms of life. There can be unity and love. On this level, on this transcendental understanding of the self. So this is the ultimate partyism. There's only one party, actually. And I'm a member. So that is the spiritual world. Everybody, happily, due to their surrendered state of being, they orbit around the desire of the Lord and serve that desire. And their will is one with His will. There is no envy anymore. That is a problem of the material world. So this is what we have, a great entourage. And as the entourage of a king glorifies the king, so the entourage of Lord Krishna glorifies Lord Krishna. Who's ever seen an entourage of some VIP? It's quite, you know, if it's a very glorious entourage, it's kind of a bit hair-raising because it's quite exciting, you know. It really glorifies that one person. I saw it once actually with my spiritual master, David Mrita Swami. We're in Manchester. And he pulled up in a car with all the brahmacharis. And one brahmachari got out of the car and ran around, opened the door. And David Mrita Swami, in his real style, kind of stood up. And the devotee held an umbrella over his head. And then somebody opened the gate, and he just walked in a regal style across the front yard of the temple, and in the door, everybody, and then all the ladies, they'd come out, because they were living in the temple, they'd come out, and they were chanting kirtan, and somebody brought a garland, put it over him, and it's very glorious, actually. There's a certain rustle there, a certain flavor, that is, it's majestic, it's wonderful. And because everybody was into the whole idea, we're serving this person because he is the representative of the Lord for us. He is our spiritual master. It was all done willingly, with mood, and it was spiritual, actually. Spiritual. And it was very beautiful. So in the same way, you can just imagine Lord Krishna's entourage in his regal style, because Krishna's mood in this section of Bhagavatam, in this part of his pastimes, is more, much more regal. He's kingly. You can contrast it with Vrindavan, beautiful Vrindavan. Krishna is never alone in any situation. He's always got some kind of entourage. But you can imagine in Vrindavan, Krishna is much smaller. And instead of dressing as a great king with a surrounded by a big personal guard of elite warriors, all dressed in shining armor with swords and bows and arrows, that's all very dangerous looking. Krishna is with his cowherd boys, with his flute tucked into his belt. They decorate themselves with oxides from Govardhan Hill, peacock feathers, all natural things. It's a much different mood. There's opulence there, certainly. There is beauty there, definitely. But it's a different kind of opulence. It's much more rural, much sweeter. And the main opulence of Vrindavan is actually the relationships. Because there's in Vrindavan, Krishna's mother sometimes tells Krishna off. That doesn't happen in Dwarka. There's only Ugrasen, Balaram, and they're the only ones that they're superior to Krishna. But in Vrindavan, he's just a small boy. There's many devotees that have a superior role to Krishna. And there's so many relationships. There's the parental rasa. There's the friendly rasa. And there is a Madhuri rasa. That's also there in his Dwarka Leela, but that's with his married wives. The excitement, the danger, and the depth, the intensity of the romance is not there. It's still there, but it's much more tamed. Whereas with his relationships with the gopis, it's much more uncertain. It's much more romantic and charming. So that's the real opulence, is an intimacy of closeness of relationship. Can you imagine getting close to the president or the king when he's surrounded by all his elite guard? You can't get close. Some big guy will step in front of you with a sword or a semi-automatic weapon and say, sorry, president isn't available right now. In Vrindavan, there's no such fierce personal guard surrounding Krishna. Even when the cowherd boys went out with Krishna, on the day that they would do battle with the Agrasura demon, it's described how the cowherd boys were going with their pack lunches and their bugle horns, and they were going across the fields with the cows, and they started playing a game. Who can get close to Krishna and touch his personal body? And one cowherd boy said, I will be the first. And another said, no, that will not be so. It will be me. But Krishna had gone ahead to see some specific scenery, Prabhupada explains. And so, that's very sweet. Playful mood. That is the real opulence of Vrindavan. And that is what Lord Chaitanya has come to give us, actually. As Krishna is the cowherd boy in Vrindavan, as Gopinath as a Lord of the Gopis' hearts. But also, as devotees, we appreciate all of Krishna's pastimes. Prabhupada explains that you don't just take the head, the 10th canto, cut off the head and take that. No, you take the whole body of Krishna. First canto starts with the toenail of Krishna, describing all the describing the nature of the absolute truth in its complete variegated manifestations, even as the universal form is described. And gradually we move up till we come to the shining face of Krishna, his beautiful smile, his intimacy in the rasa dance. This is his whole body. We take the whole thing. So we also take devotees happily accept descriptions of Dwarka Leela, of this kind of activity, of Krishna with his entourage. They accept that. They glorify that. And in fact, we have to be very careful in our young stage of devotional service of taking the intimate side of Krishna's pastimes cheaply. Even in ISKCON, when we worship the deity, when we worship Radha Vallabha, actually the mood we should have is that we're worshipping Lakshmi Narayan. Great awe and reverence. I am a humble servant of the Lord. Because we cannot relate to the Lord in the same way as intimate associates would relate to him. No, we have to approach from a long, long, long distance and become purified with great awe and reverence. Is there any questions or comments on these points? You understand, Kate? I remember Kate said that she became interested in all the transcendental philosophy, I'm not this body, this and that. And then she found out that actually the Supreme Absolute Truth is a cowherd boy and he holds a flute. And she thought, that's far out. It's the same for most people. To understand the conception of Bhagavan takes mercy, actually. To appreciate Krishna as the personality of Godhead, it takes the blessing of the Lord, actually. Just like when Lord Chaitanya, he went to the Jagannath Puri temple ahead of his entourage. He was Nityananda Priya, Nityananda Prabhu, in his ecstasy. Lord Chaitanya was taking his bath, and in his ecstasy, he took the dunder off Lord Chaitanya's servant, who was supposed to be looking after him. He snapped it into three pieces and threw it in the river. His sannyasa dunder. Lord Chaitanya came out and was like, okay, where's my dunder? And the servant said, it's been broken. Lord Nityananda broke it. And then, eternally Lord Chaitanya was very pleased. Because the sannyas lila was something of a show, so that all the lowest of the student community and all the smarter community, they would all pay obeisances to Lord Chaitanya and become purified and thus be able to taste the holy name and appreciate the Sankirtan movement. Anyway, externally he was very angry because, what a great act of disrespect to break his danda, the symbol of the renounced daughter. So he said, okay, I'm not travelling with you guys anymore. You can either go ahead or go behind. And they said, oh, certainly we will go behind following you. So he went ahead. And he arrived at the Jagannath Puri temple in advance. And he went into the temple and he saw Lord Jagannath. He had darshan. And immediately he remembered Vrindavan and in the mood of Srimati Radharani and fainted on the floor. And the guards of the temple thought, now here's another sahaja, another pretender who's feigning ecstasy to get some prestige, to get the worship of ignorant people. Okay. Let's beat him up and kick him out. But Savabhama Bhattacharya said, came, you know, he was looking up to the temple, he came up and said, no, 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 let me have a look. And then he said, actually, this is genuine. And this is a very elevated devotee. Please help me take him to my house. And I will look after him until he comes back to consciousness. So they did that. And later, Lord Chaitanya's entourage arrived. And they went to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's house after hearing that that's where Lord Chaitanya was. Lord Chaitanya was still unconscious. And anyway, there was a conversation between Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and, I think, Gopinath Acharya. That's right now. His brother-in-law. They had a conversation, they had a kind of bit of a transcendental argument. Because Gopinath Acharya said, actually, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, you're a fool. You don't know that this is the personality of Godhead, himself, in your house. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, come on. You can't just make a statement like that. Where's it in the Shastra? So they had a Shastric argument. Gopinath Acharya quoted a verse from Bhagavatam that says that in the age of Kali, those who are intelligent will worship the Lord who is golden complexioned and who constantly engages in the Sankirtan movement. Gopinath Acharya said, this is proof. And Sarvabhauma Acharya wasn't buying it. And anyway, the argument went on and on and on. And eventually Gopinath Acharya said, do you know why? Oh no, Sarvabhauma Acharya said, okay, just say he theoretically he is the Supreme Lord. Why is it that you can understand and I cannot? And Gopinath Acharya said, that's because I have the mercy of the Lord and you don't. And actually it was the case. Because later when after Sarvabhauma Acharya tried to instruct Lord Chaitanya for 7 days and he remained completely silent and unresponsive, and Sarvabhauma Acharya asked him, do you understand? You haven't said anything for 7 days. Do you understand what I'm talking about? And Lord Chaitanya said, well, I understand Vedanta very nicely, but I can't figure out what you're talking about. You're speculating. He said like that. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was taken aback. And then he said, okay, explain your understanding. And then Lord Chaitanya expounded Srimad Bhagavatam as it is. And his description was so wonderful, was so heartrending in a way, like touched Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya very deeply. And he understood, nobody can describe like this except Krishna himself. And then he got revelation. By the mercy of the Lord, the maya covering his consciousness was removed and he realized this is the Supreme Lord himself. So he achieved that mercy. So we should also pray for such mercy, because upon becoming so firmly convinced, there is no stopping the flood of devotional service from our heart. Once we know for certain, once we have faith, you know, because basically the battle of becoming Krishna consciousness, of becoming Krishna conscious, is the battle of developing our faith. Because automatically, when your faith develops and you become convinced, all impediments holding you back from full surrender are removed. Faith is described by Lord Chaitanya is that unwavering conviction that simply by performing devotional service at the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, all my other obligations and duties will be taken care of and I'll be completely satisfied in my constitutional position. So having that faith, all our problems disappear. When you realize the holy name is Krishna himself, how eager are you to chant it? How ecstatic. I remember one time, just once, I got a little bit of insight. This was also in Manchester actually, 1997. after that same evening. And Devamrita Swami, he led a kirtan and he chanted the, I think it's called Harinam Singh Kirtan prayer, you know. Hari Hodayo Namo Krishna Yadavayo Namaha Yadavayo Madhavayo Keshavayo Namaha. So many different names. And every time he'd say a name, I was thinking, Yadava, Lord of the Yadus. As a Govinda, Gopala, Govindara, all the different names that describe different features of Krishna's personality. You know, Gopala, Govinda, the cowherd boy, yeah, the one who gives pleasure to the cows, you know. Every name that came out, I was thinking about the mood. I wasn't really thinking, it was just kind of happening. And that was so ecstatic. I've never felt that as much as I try, I can't do it again. Sometimes a little bit. And I realized, you know, that actually I was sitting there and my spiritual master's talk, and I thought, what I'm going to do is just look at his feet. I'm not going to look at his shining face, because that's, I don't have the adhikar, I don't have the qualification to do that. So I just looked at his feet for a long time, and it was interesting because I was just looking at these feet, and this, I could hear what he was saying in a much deeper way than I'd heard it before. It was interesting. So anyway, if we get realization that the holy name is the Lord himself, kirtan is the perfection of life. Without a doubt, you have full realization of that fact. And you don't want to do anything else. David, you know, we were at Earth Core on the weekend, David said he went chanting one time, and he said, something unusual happened to me. I was chanting and some tears came in my eyes. He said, that doesn't normally happen, you know, because if you know him, he's very, like, he's an intellectual, you know, he's not a particularly, especially emotional person. So I said, what was your meditation? And he said, I just had some insight into what I was dealing with, the holy name. So, such the ultimate, actually, the name of the absolute truth. And God is such an enormous concept, such a important person, to say the least. And I just realized that this is the holy name and I'm not taking the holy name seriously. So some tears came in my eyes, unexpectedly. So that is the nature of the holy name, the summum bonum of everything. Lord Chaitanya said that Shastra can be summed up by one word. If you know this one word, then you'll be okay. Krishna. Just chant the holy name. All the flavors of the absolute truth, all knowledge is contained within the holy name. Okay, any questions? Carrying our false burden. Prabhupada explains in one purport of Bhagavad Gita that people in the material world, they create so many false burdens for themselves, and they struggle very hard under the weight of those false burdens, feeling very responsible. I'm such a responsible, dutiful person because I'm carrying all these false burdens. I have to go to work, it's so important. Yeah, I have to do my duty. But if you really have transcendental knowledge, you'll you can give all that up in an instant. I mean, that's not generally recommended. Krishna doesn't recommend that in Bhagavad Gita. He says that even a man of knowledge, even somebody who's light and who understands everything perfectly, they still act according to their duty, according to their body, according to their varna. They still act. Why? Because you might as well serve with what you've been given. What can repression accomplish? Why try and do something other than what your body is suited to? You just do it as service, that's the point. So, and also, they do it to set an example to others. But, you know, there are instances of people giving up everything upon getting realization, getting final insight. But generally, that doesn't happen. The growth of faith is a growth of trust. You can't surrender to someone you don't know. Lord Krishna says, Sabra Dharma Pritcha Jana Mekam Saranam Vraja Aham Tvam Sava Pavebhyo Muksha Yashami Vasujaha. That the final instruction, the crowning call of Bhagavad Gita, is just surrender unto me. Give up everything you think you should be doing, all your ideas of Dharma, and just surrender unto me and everything will be okay, don't worry. He says that, but we can't just... It's not so easy. You have to have full trust in Krishna to do that. So that's what... therefore, we are called... Vaidhi Sadhana Bhaktas. We perform regulated devotional service. We perform sadhana to purify the consciousness, to develop attachment for the Lord. That's why we chant 16 rounds every day. You know, the person on the platform of Raga, who has some spontaneous attraction to the holy name, they don't need to chant 16 rounds. You just try and stop them chanting. You try and stop them chanting, you find it very difficult because they have spontaneous attraction. We have to force ourselves to do it because the mind wants to go and engage in material activities. So you sit there and force it, and you develop gradually you become purified. And the faith grows, actually. If you carry on in devotional service, you'll get such an experience, you'll get a higher taste, that you'll be able to release your grip, your attachment to this material world, to your temporary identity, to your hopes and dreams for this body. You let all that go and say, well, if it comes, it comes. If it doesn't come, it doesn't come. And more you become absorbed in the meditation of yourself as a devotee and in your service. The transcendental reality, the ever-existing situation, transcendental situation. So we start off with karma yoga, actually. We do what we want to do, and we offer some of the fruit to Krishna. Everybody starts off in that level. I mean, except for the very rare souls who just jump straight into bhakti. And then bhakti gradually develops into bhakti yoga. It means you might still do the same service, even that you were doing before, but you're no longer attached to the service. You're just attached to the abstract principle of serving Krishna. Let me serve Krishna. However he wants me to serve, let me serve. So that happens gradually. It's a relinquishing of attachment within the heart. It's a loosening of that grip. And you do that. It's in one sense, you know, I always remember this. Indiana Jones and the search for the Ark. What was it called? And the Ark. Yeah. Quest for the Lost Ark or something like that. And there's one scene at the end where the Ark is in this cave, but and he's just come out of the mouth of one cave, and there's this big chasm, and there's some, you know, it's like a big deep, deep chasm, and he can't get across. But then he remembers some of the old myth about it, and says, actually, one has to take a leaf of faith, say something along those lines. So he just closes his eyes and steps out off the chasm, and his foot lands on something. It's an invisible bridge. And then he gets some dust and scatters it across, and all this dust sits on this invisible bridge. And he goes across. So we've actually got to trust that if we let go of our material stuff and our so-called material shelter, which is actually a complete illusion, that we'll be alright. That Krishna will look after us. Like, Krishna, what are the 6 points of surrender? Accept everything favorable for devotional service. Reject that which is unfavorable. Krishna is my protector. Krishna is my maintainer. I am a servant of the Lord, and I am humble. So, to develop that trust, that Krishna, you know, if I give up trying to get money for myself and look after myself, I'll be alright. I'll still eat. I was thinking about it the other day, you know. I'm living in the temple now. I don't have a job. You know, got lots of service, but no job. But still, you know, I'm enjoying more in terms of, you know, prasadam and happiness and nice relationships and everything that, you know, happens in the devotional life. I'm getting all that more than I did when I was working a job and worried about where my income is coming. When you look at the devotees who have stayed under the shelter of the temple their whole lives, Ani Buddha Prabhu, the Swamis, the Sannyasis, they've been maintained very nicely, actually. We think, no, I have to go and get a job. And we get completely entangled in the material world, getting a job and working and worrying. And at the end of the day, when we've done our 8 hours or our 10 hours or our 15 hours or whatever it is that you have to work these days, you're just in the same position as the person who just got up and chanted their rounds and did devotional service all day. But not everybody can understand that, you know, I'll be alright. Actually, the human being needs very little to survive. You need to keep your body warm. Basically, you need something to eat. Rice and dal isn't very expensive. Rice, dal and vegetables. But it's because we have material desires, because we want to eat very nicely. And we want to also get fame, adoration, distinction, achieve things in the material world. And our idea is that we'll get the glorification of all the envious, all the other envious living entities. But actually what we'll just achieve is the envy of the envious living entities. So we have to get realization on the illusion of the world, and also we have to develop our trust in the lotus feet of Krishna. And that happens gradually. Give a little bit, that's okay, I'm okay. Give a little bit more. It's not like you have to jump onto that invisible bridge just as a leap of faith. You can just give a little bit more, put your foot down, test the water. Okay, it's alright, it's not too cold. Go in a little bit deeper, a little bit deeper, a little bit deeper. And eventually you can dunk your head under, you know. Some people just dive straight in, but they're rare. Okay? Bhagavad Gita explains everything, actually. Bhagavad Gita is very wonderful. We just have to study it deeply. Think about it. And everything is there. The whole process. Jnana Yoga is a part. You can think of the head, heart and hands. Bhakti is the heart. Karma Yoga is the hands of the activity. And Jnana is the head, the thinking about it. Bhakti Yoga actually combines all three.
So the body doesn't actually need to go to a separate state of
Jnana. No. Krishna says that I, as the super soul, to those constantly devoted to serving me with love, I, dwelling within the heart, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. So simply by serving, you'll That's another aspect of faith. By serving, I will be given what I need to know. Because actually you don't need to know everything to be a devotee. You don't need to know what's happening, what, you know, Mr. Wong is doing in China right now. You don't need to know. You know, you don't need to know everything about everything. You just need to know that I am a servant of Krishna. Krishna is the Supreme Lord. And how to do my service. So Krishna says, I am the super soul within the heart, and I give knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. I give that to the living entity. So you will get what you need to know to do your service. But that also takes faith. No, I have to go to university and try and speculate and understand everything and study many books. And this is actually intellectual sense gratification and a lack of trust. But also for the intellectual person, they've got a period of, you know, I know a lot of intellectual people, and their intelligence is so voracious that if they don't, it's just like if your digestion is very powerful, if you don't put something in it, it's just like it's going to burn you up, you know. So their intelligence is very voracious, so they've got to constantly put things in there to chew, you know, to keep their intelligence is just like, so you got to put something in there, to, so it's got something to chew, you know. But gradually, yeah, you can. Jnana is not. Jnana can take you so far. But without bhakti, you get stuck. You can only realize Brahman. Without mercy arising from devotion, you can't go beyond that point.
The question is more about ability. Practicing devotion service.
Does a devotee go to Jnana
Yoga as an aspect of stage?
No.
Or because he just goes from Karma Yoga to Bhakti Yoga?
No, he cultivates both simultaneously. Karma Yoga, when I say Karma Yoga, what I mean is that the person is performing, might be doing service at the temple, for example. We're engaged in Bhakti Yoga, right? No, but they're attached. They're attached to acting in a certain way. Like I might be attached to, say, management. I might be attached to cooking or whatever. I might be attached to being a mother and looking after my children. Of course, I'm doing it as a service. I'm performing my duty, my dharma, this and that. And it's all very nice. But gradually, what happens is that, you know, doing what I want to do and then offering it to Krishna just turns into doing what Krishna wants me to do out of love. So that looks very similar, but actually the difference is there. So they don't Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga, generally like somebody's doing karma in the world and then they realize, hey, this is a waste of time, this is completely pointless, this world is temporary. Now let me renounce it all. Let me get Jnana. What is the true self and this and that. Yeah, it's all combined, head, heart, and hands. Your head is full. This is Srila Prabhupada, and also my spiritual master. He says that the head should be full of knowledge, the heart should be full of love, and the hand should be active. The complete person is engaged. The head informs the heart, and the heart fills the action with devotion. This is very attractive, actually. Because other spiritual paths, other spiritual teachings, they don't give such a complete picture of how to fully engage your personhood in spiritual activity. Most people, most spiritual groups, most spiritual philosophies consider personhood as a big problem, actually. But Bhakti Yoga is not like that. You can use your head, heart, and hands, your full person, and make it completely spiritual. You've got knowledge in your mind, you've got love in your heart, and you keep your senses engaged. So it all happens simultaneously in one package. Yeah. That's why we read books, we do practical service, and we chant the holy name. This is, in one sense, this is jnana. Ultimately, it becomes bhakti. In the beginning, you're thinking, I'm accumulating knowledge, I'm becoming wise, I'm becoming deep, I'm becoming spiritual. But eventually, it's just like, Wow, Krishna did that. That's so amazing. Krishna did that. Wow. And it changes the quality. It becomes more of a... Yeah, it becomes worship, actually. Is that okay? Okay. We'll stop there. It's getting late. Goran Chai Srimad Bhagavatam Ki. You're done.